98.7 FM. Arizona's sports station. Bickley and Murata.
It's going to be lit, is what I hear every single day. It's the greatest radio show ever.
Dan Bickley. Vince Murata.
It's the greatest show on earth.
Bickley and Murata. This is the greatest
show. Good morning and welcome.
I love this show.
Me too.
It's the greatest radio show that's ever existed.
It really, really is.
In case you needed a refresher for the new version of the prolonged open.
Let's cut the crap, Mr. Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
I hate everything about this show. This is the worst show in the world. Good morning, everybody. What is happening? Dan Bickley, Vince Murata, Jared Carlin on another rainy, cloudy day. And I cannot escape people. Everyone wants to tell you how much they love rainy, cold days in Arizona. And I wonder how much of it is nostalgia that a lot of us grew up with weather. So when you get weather, you think about, oh, what it used to be like.
Yeah.
How much of it is also that we live in a state where in the year 2020 alone, we had 53 days where the temperatures exceeded 110 degrees. 53 days. That's one out of 6 days.
So people longing for those days? No thanks.
No. That's why this stuff hits so differently. Because we are burned and battered into submission.
It is true, but do you have a limit on your tolerance for this type of weather?
No, keep it coming. I don't know. I just I like it a lot.
I'm liking this right now.
Yeah,
but yeah, but well, I'm not doing a lot of driving. Mm-hmm. There's not a lot of outdoor things to do, so I could tolerate it then.
Let me tell you,
you got to drive a lot in rain. It sucks.
Now listen, this is something I experienced yesterday. Now living in Fountain Hills, every now and again over the last few years, we have had a microburst of snow. People in the high desert, you kind of get that every now and again, but to get it down here is a little bit different. Yesterday, we got off air, and we were leaving, and we're like, man, is it nasty out, right?
Mm-hmm.
So I got in my car, and I got in the 51. I was heading down to ASU, and it was just crazy rain. And I look at the thermostat. It was 36 degrees, and I thought, we are a few degrees away from a full-on blizzard right now. And then right up above me, I'm like, wait a minute. The weather was turning to slushy, wasn't quite snow yet. It turned to slush on the 51. One poor girl spun out. Yeah.
A winner in mix.
Yeah.
But
I'm
she
like
was
this?
On the phone, to be honest. She was texting.
She was probably taking a selfie. Yeah, probably was. And I'm like, you don't see this in Phoenix. I mean, every now and again, Cave Creek.
Oh, yeah.
Hills,
I have a really,
north.
Really short drive, obviously, you know, living in the area of the radio station. But I got home and I pulled into my spot and I got out and I was like, what is all over the base of my windows? And I was like, are those leaves?
Uh-huh.
As, you know, you get that from the
right.
trees.
Yeah.
No, it was just ice.
Yeah. Yeah, it was crazy.
Yeah.
Haven't seen that kind of stuff in a while. So there you go. Kind of fun. All right,
Carlin. Two more days left in me before I start complaining.
Push the magic button. Start complaining? Push the magic button, Jared.
On this subject. Okay.
The splash. The stories Peter's leaves in the sports world. The splash.
Get him all coming.
The splash brought to you by Presidential Pools, Arizona's number one pool builder. See why at presidentialpools.com.
We start the splash for Tuesday, January 26, 2021. With the remembrance. One year ago today was a very, 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 very bad day. It was the anniversary, you know, that was the day that Kobe Bryant, his daughter, and seven other people died in the helicopter crash. It was also the day of the first confirmed case of COVID-19 in Arizona.
I remember it like it was 10 years ago. Seriously, I was on a golf course at Papago with a couple of friends, and both those things came down in the same day via text while you're on a golf course. And it was like, what?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so it has officially been a year since, in my mind, when all of this kicked in. Everything that marked 2020 as the year from hell kicked in 1 year ago today.
Interesting to note, though, even after the first case, we were still about 7 weeks away from full-on, like, shutdown panic mode.
Yeah,
but,
right.
Yeah, this was the
but
beginning.
But the death of Kobe lingered. I mean, that was not Hank Aaron passing away.
No, that was a man in the prime of his life.
Suddenly yanked gone. Yeah.
And then the Friday, that was a Sunday that happened. The Friday after, the Suns had the home game against Oklahoma City, where they did the Kobe remembrance. They did it all the arenas. And I find it hard to believe that I was part of that moment in a full arena. There was 17,000 people there.
That's amazing.
Life has changed so much in a year. It's unbelievable. Arizona Cardinals made some coaching moves official yesterday. They promote Sean Kugler to run game coordinator in addition to his offensive line coaching duties. Cam Turner is now officially the quarterback's coach, and Sean Jefferson, as reported last week, coming in as the wide receiver's coach. We speculated when all this stuff trickled out, they'll do it in one fell swoop, all their coaching changes. Uh-huh. So those are coaching changes, and that's it.
And so the added responsibility is going to Sean Kugler, who gets a promotion, who maybe will have more of a hand in where the offense goes. I don't know, Vinny. It seems to me to be either a move you make on the cheap or a move you make if you're delusional. I don't know. I don't get it. But it's the Cardinals are choosing this path for whatever reasons. I think there's, and we're going to have this discussion, there's a fascinating case as to when and where and how is this team ever going to find an identity?
Great question. The Phoenix Suns don't get back on the floor until tomorrow night against Oklahoma City. Media wasn't able to talk to Monty Williams or Devin Booker on Monday, meaning we'll probably get an update about the All-Star guard's hamstring injury later today. Booker, of course, left Friday night's game against Denver in overtime and then didn't play in Saturday's rematch. So we'll see what his status is. The Lakers were in Cleveland last night. LeBron James, bless his heart, he took offense to a Cleveland Cavaliers executive clapping a little bit too much after James missed a shot. And to quote Michael Jordan, and I took that personally. So LeBron scored 21 of his 46 points in the fourth quarter of the Lakers' 115-108 win over the Cavs. They've now started 10-0 on the road, a new team record.
Yeah, they're a really good basketball team. And LeBron James, when he has a night like that, you realize that at his peak, he's still the best in the sport. That's what kind of last night was to me.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
It was very reassuring, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was great.
Discussions between the NBA and the National Basketball Players Association are underway about still holding an All-Star game in what would be a one-day event on March 7th. This, according to The Athletic, one of the sites mentioned is State Farm Arena in Atlanta. Talks have also been going on about having a tie-in with historically black colleges and universities, but all discussions are still in the early stages. I still am raving about the quality of play we saw in last year's All-Star game.
Mm-hmm.
They don't need an All-Star game this year.
No.
Don't do it.
No. Why risk it? Why take any chances? Why? Why?
We're, March is...
It's such a social event for the players.
Yeah.
How do you...
Let's take the best players put them together so if there is a COVID outbreak, all the best players are in protocols. That'd be a great idea.
Let's bring elite superstars together with other elite superstars, the people they actually want to be with, because generally when elite superstars hang out on the road, it's people want to be with them. Now there's other people they want to be around. It's a purely a social networking kind of deal. No, bad idea. I'm on Team Marotta here.
Last night in college basketball, to sum up ASU's performance in Tucson in one sound effect. Moving on.
Jared's got a word for that. I'm sure he's got plenty of words for that.
Arizona jumps out to a 12-0 lead in the first 6.5 minutes. Never look back. 80-67 in a game that wasn't that close.
Squirting diarrhea.
They sweep ASU in the season series with both wins coming over the last 5 days. ASU has now lost 6 games in a row. They're 1-5 and in last place in the Pac-12, and they're back on the floor Thursday night against Cal, the only team they've beaten in conference play, in Tempe on Thursday.
You talk about a low point for the ASU program. There have been a lot of low points, but in reading tweets from our guy Doug Tamaro, He described getting on a bus that got back in Tempe after a 100-mile ride at 2:30 in the morning, can't have food or drink on the bus because of COVID measures, and then pointed out that Jesse Morrison,
who?
Young, Jesse Morrison.
Young Jesse.
Yes, who ran the board while you were gone, was the only Phoenix media member to represent in Tucson last night.
He was the only sucker now, to make that trip.
Listen, we were in the midst of wicked weather, a nor'easter, right? To do a Boston thing. We were in the midst
of... It was
a
wicked nor'easter.
Right.
Not driving down to Tucson. It's wicked dangerous.
We can't even bring some Dunkin' on the bus.
We got the perfect storm going on. You want me to drive down to Tucson and watch that crap? No, thank you.
Yeah, so you had that, you had the wicked nor'easter, and then you had a pandemic, and then you had an ASU team that doesn't that cares less than you do.
They didn't care less than me because it got to a certain point in the first half, and I said, I'm not staying up for this. Sorry.
That was a smart... Sorry, not sorry, right?
Yeah. Coyotes back at it tonight. They're hosting the Anaheim Ducks at Gila River Arena. Former Coyotes GM John Chyka suspended by the NHL until December 31st, 2021. He's not in the league right now, but for pursuing other opportunities with NHL teams while he was under contract with Arizona. That after he cost the Coyotes draft picks for illegally testing prospects. Ugh.
Yeah, and to all you Coyotes people who told me, yeah, yo, it's no big deal. This is nothing. no one's even concerned. I'll never forget.
Yeah.
Right?
Rory McIlroy commits to playing the Waste Management Phoenix Open for the first time along with Jason Day. So two more top 50 golfers in the field. And tonight we will learn the outcome of the Baseball Hall of Fame vote. Group of players with red flags next to their name tops the ballot. Roger Clemens, Barry Bonds, Curt Schilling, Andy Pettit, Omar Vizquel among them.
Yeah, I've got a really good idea about it. I'm going to unveil later.
Okay.
I've got a genius idea for Major League Baseball.
Ooh. Can it be implemented before the vote comes out today or no?
No,
okay.
Unfortunately.
Moving forward. There you go. There's your splash for Tuesday, January 26th. Full disclosure, I didn't watch it last night, but then felt guilty, so fired up the DVR and did watch the debacle from Tucson this morning. And we'll get into the latest about it next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
Here's Bagley getting down low, shoots it up, and finally gets one to fall. Marcus Bagley with the first basket of the ball game for Arizona State with a little over 13 minutes to play in the first half.
That's usually a sign. When you go 6.5 minutes without scoring a basket to start a game.
Yeah, it's not a good
usually
sign.
Usually a sign. Usually leads to this.
And Arizona, for the first time in 3 years, is going to sweep Arizona State in the 2020-2021 season.
That's Tim Healy, the voice of the Sun Devils. 80-67. If you didn't watch the game, don't get fooled by those two numbers. It got down to 9 points, the deficit, with about 4 minutes to go. And talking before the show, Jarrett and his U of A contingent were getting a little bit nervous that Arizona was going to blow that. I had never had that feeling at all. Watching
no,
that
listen, 10-0, 26-6.
For me, Bick, that was for the first 30 minutes of basketball in Tucson. That was the basketball equivalent of the beatdown the ASU football team put on the Arizona football team.
Karma has a funny way in this rivalry between Arizona and Arizona State, and as witnessed by what has happened in the two basketball games since that billboard went up taunting the 70-70 no pity for the kitty thing. It's crazy how that works in this rivalry. But I look at this thing and I really wonder about Bobby Hurley and what is going on with this team and why is this team such a lost cause. And why exactly did Bobby Hurley do what he did at the end of that first matchup where he chose to make everything in the post-game press conference about one single non-call from the officials on Remy Martin? He said, listen, you can ask me whatever you want. I'm probably coming back to this. Why he decided to cover for that basketball team, why he decided to absolve that basketball team from blowing a game against Arizona the first time around, I have no idea. But if I'm Arizona, I know how I'm going to respond. I'm going to respond by taking the floor and running those guys off the gym,
and
off the court.
And that's what they did.
Yeah. So Bobby Hurley is now 3-9 against the Wildcats in his career. So he's kind of getting down in that same category that everybody who is not Ned Wolk ends up in.
Well, I mean, that's another thought I had watching it was it got so ugly so fast. It was reminiscent of the days when Arizona was a legit powerhouse under Lute Olson and ASU was okay under Bill Frieder. And they would go down to Tucson. You know, the game in Tempe usually was a close Arizona win. They'd go down to Tucson and just get their teeth kicked in.
Mm-hmm.
That's what it felt like last night. And it really, I mean, Arizona's not a powerhouse.
That's the thing. Not only are they not a powerhouse, they're not playing for anything.
No!
There was no crowd there for, you know, the typical McKell atmosphere. And ASU was playing for everything at this point.
Vinny and I were talking about this before the show. We don't do that very often when it comes to topics and content, but this one, we made an exception because you wonder how a basketball team with recruits like Josh Christopher, with a recruit like Marcus Bagley, with a team on paper that looked as good as this team.
Remy
Martin coming back. How could a team like this play like this? How could they lack this much fire and connectivity? And you know what? You know what this is? This is welcome to the world of one and dones when you're getting kids who do not give a whit about your team, your program, your legacy. They don't care. If your team is in a hole and you're the head coach and you're trying to do anything you can to pull them out of it, at some point in time, they're like, I don't care. Why am I investing into this? And that's all well, and I'm not trying to besmirch all one and dones. If you can get enough of them on a yearly basis, it's not a bad way to produce compelling basketball. But as Vinny pointed out, you've got to have a system to drop these one and dones in so the bottom doesn't fall out of the tub.
You have to have an identity. You have to have a culture. And this is really their first foray. And would I say they're better off without players like Josh Christopher and Marcus Bagley? Absolutely not. But when the closest thing you have to an identity is guard you, and you're 211th in the nation in assists. If you have that many guards, shouldn't you be really good at sharing the basketball?
Mm-hmm.
Everything is like one-on-one.
Yeah.
It's five games of one-on-one going on when ASU's on offense right now. And it just, it's very disappointing. Bobby Hurley, after the game, once again talked about the slow start.
Yeah, I felt like, we lacked energy early in the game. Kind of lethargic out of the gate. I got to do a better job of getting us ready to play early in the game. They were more aggressive. They were, they got, a few transition baskets, which with our speed and quickness, we should not give up. And, those are really tough plays. I thought we took some really challenging shots. So our shot selection was not really good.
There was a time in the first half, Bick, where and I didn't chart it, but I would be willing to bet ASU had twice as many air balls as they had baskets at one point of the first half.
Yeah.
And that was, kind of testament to what Bobby Hurley talked about. Shot selection, just not movement with the ball. Again, a lot of isolation stuff.
They were so sloppy, though. Turnovers, blocked shots.
Here's more from Bobby Hurley.
Bottom line was Arizona was the hungrier team, and they were more ready to play right at the start of the game. And it was really there wasn't a whole lot we could do. I commend our effort in the second half, but the cabinet is filled with moral victories. So I'm not really, that enthusiastic that we put together a decent second half, but not many positives to take out of this.
I mean, the game last Thursday in Tempe, the Sun Devils got off to a slow start, Bick. And to their credit, they were able to claw their way back in and actually played pretty well in the second half. The first half on Thursday, I thought was really tough to watch too. But it seemed we're having this discussion with multiple teams in town about not being able to get ready to play a game. Lethargic. Lacking intensity and focus. How many times did we come in on Mondays and talk about that with the Cardinals? How many times did we talk to Cliff Kingsbury about that subject this year? About having the necessary urgency to play an NFL game. The thing that I can't get past is what Jarrett brought up. Why is Arizona so hungry? Those guys are in the basketball definition of limbo. There's no fans. There's no carrot at the end of the season for them.
Yeah.
Yet they're out there playing their butts off.
Right. And in a cruel twist of irony, unless they rescind their self-imposed NCAA tournament ban, the one team that Arizona fans might really want to see get a reward like that is the team that's not going to be able to get it. Weird how that works out. I thought the same thing. It's like suddenly Sean Miller, in the midst of all these black clouds and allegations and upcoming sanctions and self-imposed this, he's got a team that people might latch on to if you're a Wildcat fan. With some players who might be around for a while.
That was to say, for once, I mean, with a team that's not full of one and duns.
Yeah, right. I mean, I don't think Tabellis is getting drafted anytime soon or Terry anytime soon.
Akinjo and...
Yeah, I mean, but you're right, Vinny, and it's just...
I think there's definitely something to what you were saying about the billboard plus the Bobby Hurley press conference.
Without a doubt.
That sort of made him like, okay, we're going to show you what a loss looks like.
Yeah, yeah, and I think that should kind of be a lesson learned. I thought it was a little bit off just the way, because watching that first game between these two teams down the stretch, I was one who thought, oh, okay, you look at that. Look, Bobby Hurley's tweeting out a still picture of the play. Wow, that's going to cost him some money.
And it did.
What in the world is his obsession with this final play of the game when he's got a team that just coughed up a hairball again down the stretch that hasn't won a meaningful game since what, December? First week of December?
Well, what did I say last Thursday going into that game, Beck? These two games represented an opportunity for ASU to reverse the course of their season and get things on track, and it went exactly the opposite way.
You called it.
They lose a buzzer beater. And then they put forth one of the worst efforts we've seen in the last decade from this basketball program. Very disappointing. I think it's beyond saving now.
Yeah. No, I think you're right.
Shocked if this thing gets back on the rail.
Yeah, no, it's not going to.
All right, coming up next, we'll have to wait till tomorrow to see the next chapter in the book that's being written by DeAndre Ayton and his resurgence. But we'll hear what some of his teammates had to say about him yesterday. That's coming up next. Bickley and Murata live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Bickley and Murata on this Tuesday, live from the Ak-Chin Community Studios here on 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station. Suns with a non-COVID-related stretch of a few days off. Haven't played since Saturday night, Sunday, Monday, Tuesday, all off. They're back on the court tomorrow night, back-to-back home games against the Oklahoma City Thunder and then the Golden State Warriors on Thursday. And we talked yesterday at great length about the frustration of the weekend with the Suns, but I think we can all agree on one thing in terms of positivity and a bright spot, at least recently in the last four or so games, and that is the play of DeAndre Ayton. And that's one of the things that I think Suns fans who even were frustrated by some of DeAndre Ayton's early season offerings in terms of aggressiveness, they're looking forward to watching him play now, because quite honestly, Bick, he's looked like a different player the last few times out.
He has, and it's a shame that what he has done hasn't directly translated to this team just pummeling opponents. That's kind of perplexing to me.
Or even winning,
for that matter.
They lost three of those four games.
Right. No, I know that. So I think that the cause and effect isn't quite what it will be or should be, but I'm not sure that's exactly his fault. Maybe so much emphasis has been placed on getting him going that it's kind of, I don't know, it's created some weirdness in other parts of the game. I don't know. But I would much rather have the Phoenix Suns trending in this direction. DeAndre Ayton playing four really good games in a row and the Suns losing three of four, then flip it. Then DeAndre Ayton plummeting still, and the team somehow winning three of the last four, if that makes any sense to you. I would rather have these set of conditions right now.
Well, I mean,
because I think the winning will come.
And that's the key. Some people will hear you say that and say, well, winning is important. Well, absolutely it is. But this kind of feels, and we touched on this, with the slower pace, the reliance in the half court, even though they're not winning those games, it kind of feels somewhat like a long play for the Suns right now, doesn't it?
Yeah, no, it does. But I think a long play in terms of, I think, even in this season, because if you start getting this every night, they'll piece something together around him. They'll figure this out eventually. I suspect Chris Paul is going to be much better. I would suspect Devin Booker is going to be much better. If I had to give grades to those players right now at this point in time in the season, I'd maybe B and B minus, B and C plus. Not exactly what I would expect to give these two great players on the Phoenix Suns. I think both of them are going to get much better. And so when that happens, if DeAndre Ayton is in this place he's in now, everything's going to be fine. Yep. Everything's going to be fine.
Chris Paul yesterday did speak with the media and was asked about the subject of accountability and how it applies to DeAndre Ayton.
It's very important, not only on this team, but I think every team. The way DA's responded is unbelievable. I mean, seriously, the stuff that I've been seeing him for the last few games, you knew he had it inside of him. And I think we just got to keep growing, all of us together, and I think we'll be fine.
And that whole thing, we've had so much discussion, too, about the needling, the prodding, the encouragement of DeAndre Ayton to get to the point that he's shown in the last four games. Mm-hmm. But now that you have this stretch of games, if you're a Monty Williams or a Devin Booker or a Chris Paul or one of the assistant coaches, Mark Bryant, the big man coach for the Suns, they have now actual, proof, tangible proof. Okay, this is what you're capable of, DeAndre. This should be the baseline. And when you have that experience to fall back on, I think that makes that process so much easier to tap back into it, to keep on him, because now he knows, too, I can do this.
Right, and he's sustaining it, which is really the next key step here. I would love to know what's allowed him to stack four games in a row like this. I wonder what's allowed him now to take the ball on the block and immediately spin or immediately attack the basket when he seemed to just want to get rid of the basketball. The difference, the optics are phenomenal. And it's really, that's all they've ever been about with me, because it's such a clear boost for the basketball team to have a big guy playing big. And it just really fuels the team in a lot of great ways. And I hope that's what it is. I hope DeAndre Ayton has kind of been awakened hard and coached harder than ever before by both Chris Paul and Monty Williams and his other teammates. And then I hope in response, he's kind of seen the way his play and his newfound intensity has kind of lifted up everybody around him. And I hope that he's really vibing on that, because that will make this continue. If he's just doing it because, all right, I'll get these guys off my back, that wouldn't be good. Mm-hmm. What would be good is if he's like, wow, okay, all right, I get it. Okay, yeah, that's pretty cool, dunking the ball like that. If it's like that, I think everything is going to be just good.
Yep. Javon Carter also spoke to the media yesterday, was asked about the difference he sees in his teammate DeAndre Ayton.
He's just trying to kill every time now. He's just dominating. Every time he get the ball in the paint, he's trying to score. Before, he was being, selfish, making the right pass to the right person. But now he's just taking it upon himself and finishing in the paint like we need him to.
He's just trying to kill every time right now. That's got to be music to your ears, Beck.
Yeah, well, they're right. But it's not just me, Vinny. And this has never been anything personal, and I think it's pretty obvious what DeAndre is capable of doing. And it's good to see him doing it.
Yeah, branching out outside of DeAndre Ayton, and we should get an injury update on Devin Booker and his availability for tomorrow or Thursday night against Golden State. That game been pushed back, by the way, to an 8 o'clock start time. It was a frustrating – they're in a frustrating stretch right now. They've not played great team basketball. Shots have not fallen. The second half and the overtimes on Saturday night against Denver was just an offensive slog. I'm really curious to see not only DeAndre Ayton continue, but I want to see what's going on with Chris Paul in the second half of games. He's tried to, and in some, and he has shouldered much more of the scoring load offensively in the in those two losses to Denver. But the Suns were way more effective in the first halves of those games when he was able to distribute, get teammates involved. Again, 26 first half assists in those two games as opposed to two.
Yeah, well, in the second half. Yeah, I don't know what would cause something like that. I don't know what would cause an offensive breakdown or a change in what philosophy that would lead to numbers like that, other than the combination of missed shots and the fact the one constant I can see is that the Suns have not been very good in clutch time basketball. And I think the numbers bear that out. Mm-hmm. I saw them over the weekend. It's something they're going to have to get better at. The really good basketball teams make shots down the stretch of close games, and if not, you're not going to get very far.
Yeah, part of it is definitely he's making the same passes, but Mikal Bridges and Cam Johnson and Jay Crowder are not hitting their shots in the second half.
Well, there's also a lot more turnovers in the second half of those games, too.
So I think that has a lot to do with it, and I do think the Phoenix Suns, in terms of shooting the ball consistently, they have to get a lot better than that as well. This was, going into the season on paper, a really good perimeter shooting basketball team. And a lot of it was Jay Crowder and the numbers he put up inside the bubble. And a lot of people wondered, okay, is this going to translate? So far, it hasn't. And it's same with Devin Booker. Devin Booker hasn't shot the ball as well. Chris Paul has really not been very accurate. I mean, like you said, right elbow, it's like a layup for the guy. Mm-hmm. But everything else mid-range, he used to be just money at. I still trust Chris Paul down the stretch. He's got a great history of coming up big down the stretch. So I do trust that element of it. But there's just things the Suns have to get better at, and they got to piece together some of this stuff. I think there's a little confusion in these endgame situations. Who is taking the ball? Okay, are we clearing out for Devin Booker? Is he going to take the ball to the basket? When and where do we dish off? Who do we facilitate to? And I think there's been too much of that. I think, I said this to you before, I would like to see down in the short term, I would like to see either Chris Paul or Devin Booker take every big shot down the stretch of basketball games, just in the short term. Just get that component going so you know it's there. Because when you get to the playoffs, that's who you're going to lean on to take big shots. Because if you pass out to Cam Johnson, no offense to Cam, for a three-point shot in Game 7 of the Western Conference Finals, you will be killed if you're Devin Booker or Chris Paul.
Mm-hmm.
Your big-time players
if
have
it doesn't
to make,
go in.
If, well, clearly. That's exactly right. If you do the Paul George off the side of the backboard, uh-oh.
Yeah, Suns will take on the Oklahoma City Thunder tomorrow. We'll talk more Suns basketball at 11. Kellen Olson from ArizonaSports.com will join us. Coming up next, yep, there's two teams still playing football. Everybody else in draft preparation mode, including the Cardinals. And Mel Kiper has released his first mock draft of the season. We'll tell you what it portends for the Cardinals and other teams next. Bickley and Murata, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.
Bickley and Murata.
Bickley and Murata.
98.7 FM, Arizona's sports station.
We are still about 3 months away from the NFL draft. But that doesn't mean we're not going to talk a lot about draft between now and the end of April, when the Arizona Cardinals will make the 16th overall selection in the first round. And it's a little bit newsworthy at this point when one of the big draft analysts puts out a mock draft pick. And that is what's happened today on ESPN.com. Mel Kiper Jr., his first mock draft of the year, came out this morning. No surprise, Trevor Lawrence, number one overall to the Jacksonville Jaguars. Number two, maybe a bit of a surprise. The New York Jets taking DeVonta Smith, the wide receiver from Alabama, who did make headlines today, by the way. DeVonta Smith refused to be measured or weighed at the Senior Bowl. Says he's going to wait for that to happen at the Alabama Pro Day. What do you make of that?
That people are going to go, wait, he can't survive at 173 pounds?
Exactly.
That's what they're going to make
exactly. Exactly.
Yeah, that's what's going to happen there. You know how it goes with this combine. It is just, it is so nitpicky. It just drives you insane. Really does. But you know what? There are some fascinating questions when it comes to that. Because not only not only is Devontae Smith slight, he's not as fast as you think he is. His top 40 time is good. It's not elite.
Not
you watch him run for Alabama, and it looks elite.
He's, yes.
It's not.
But there's a difference between elite football field speed and straight line sprinter speed.
That's very true. There's some guys who are faster on a football field. Yes,
that's why with all these player trackers now, that would be a more accurate reading, is get their top on the field speed as opposed to 40 yards.
That would be.
Yeah.
So why are we measuring guys in the 40?
Or just measure everybody wearing their pads and uniforms and helmets.
Yeah, well, that too.
Never makes any sense to me.
For a couple things, I think I forget what guest we had a couple years ago during the Super Bowl, but somebody once said to us, the reason why people love the Combine and they love these debatables is it's very much like gambling. Nothing is bigger rolls of the dice than GMs choosing football players for their teams. And there's an inherent kind of rush from that gambling provides and is a big fuel of football. To me, though, I don't know. I didn't even know the Combine was going to be a thing in 2021.
It really isn't. I mean, all the measurements and tests are going to be on pro days.
Yeah.
Nobody's going to Indianapolis, so they're altering it. But
we picked a good year to go, Vinny. You know what I mean?
Elsewhere in the top five on Kuiper's mock draft, Miami, their third pick, the pick they got from Houston, Jamar Chase, the wide receiver from LSU. Excuse me.
Yeah.
The second quarterback off the board on this version of the draft, Zach Wilson of BYU, going to the Falcons at 4. And then Penei Sewell, the offensive tackle from Oregon, going to Cincinnati at 5. Interesting. He's got Justin Fields lasting till 7.
Okay.
Going to Detroit. Trey Lance, the quarterback from North Dakota State, Carolina at 8.
Okay.
Mac Jones, the quarterback from Alabama, going 15 to the New England Patriots.
Yeah, I don't see that. Okay, continue.
And then at the 16th pick for the Cardinals, has them going corner, Caleb Farley, the cornerback from Virginia Tech. And as somebody who has been monitoring the early mock drafts, corner is a very popular position. The corner most linked in the early mocks is J.C. Horn from South Carolina going to the Cardinals. Now, he ended his season early to start preparation for the draft. Caleb Farley completely opted out of the 2020 season at Virginia Tech. Really good player.
I was wondering why I couldn't remember him.
Is that why you couldn't remember
him? I didn't see him play. Just trying to piece together some highlights in my head from the 2020 season.
Uh-huh. Again, this is just a snapshot, but corner could be a spot. And another player that gets mentioned a lot, at least at this stage pick, is Kyle Pitts, the tight end from Florida. And there was a piece on ArizonaSports.com that I put together because last week in the mock drafts that were tracked, and I think there was 23 of them, Kyle Pitts showed up to the Cardinals more than anyone. Will he be there at 16? I don't know, but would you feel I love Kyle Pitts as a player. Mm-hmm. And watching him, you know, when he was healthy for Florida this past year, everybody knew he was getting the ball. Nobody could stop him. I love the wrinkle that tight ends can provide an offense in the NFL, and we see a lot of the great offenses, including Travis Kelce with Kansas City, really employing tight ends.
Yeah.
The Cardinals have struggled to get the ball to tight ends. Now, they don't have an elite pass catcher, although the way they raved about Dan Arnold in training camp, you thought he was going to get 50-plus catches this past year, didn't you?
Yes. Yes, I did.
Cardinals have 88 completions to tight ends in 2 years of the Cliff Kingsbury era.
Listen, Dan Arnold it's frustrating to me because he flashes. There are times when he looks like he could be a knockoff of a guy like Travis Kelce, but he just doesn't have the physicality or the consistency. I would still consider that piece in development and something that the Cardinals can work with.
Yeah.
You know what I saw, and they just flashed a guy. This is apropos of nothing, but there's a few running backs that are big time studs in this one. Najee Harris from Alabama is a kid I really like. I don't know if I like Travis Etienne of Clemson all that much because he's kind of had an up and down year, and even when he's been healthy, there have been rumblings that he doesn't run as hard all the time? I don't know, but this Najee Harris kid looks terrific. Cardinals are going to need to do that running back by stable thing, in my opinion. Not only so they don't have to pay Kenyon Drake, but because I think it's a smart way to conserve costs.
Yeah, but I also think they can go running back by committee and not invest a first-round pick.
Okay.
Yes. And Kuiper's draft today, Najee Harris, the only running back taken in the first round. He's going 30th overall.
30th? Yeah, okay. So Cardinals second round for that.
This was interesting, too. Bleacher Report Gridiron put out a tweet. They asked two of the top wide receivers in football, two of the young guys, DK Metcalf and Justin Jefferson, to rank their top five wide receivers in the game right now.
Mm-hmm.
DK Metcalf had Julio Jones 1, himself 2, DeAndre Hopkins 3, Devontae Adams 4, and then a three-way tie between, what a cop-out, Stephon Diggs, Odell Beckham Jr., and A.J. Brown at
Nashville,
5.
Of Tennessee.
And that's DK Metcalf putting A.J. Brown, his former college teammate, in the top 5.
Right.
Justin Jefferson had Julio Jones 1, Devontae Adams 2, himself 3, DK Metcalf 4, DeAndre Hopkins 5. DeAndre Hopkins...
Did not like this at all, Vinny. He responded with a gif of Ice Cube saying, "Bye, Felicia." That was first, and then he wasn't done. What did he have after that?
Let me see. Can't take nothing away from them. We're all great, but me at 5, laughing emojis, he must be drinking.
Wow. That's funny. I'm glad DeAndre Hopkins is built like that. It's kind of funny to get a little bent out of shape over something.
He actually
like
said
that.
He must be drinking Shannon Sharpe's yak.
Okay, yeah, Shannon Sharpe's yak. Okay, that's all right. I don't mind DeAndre Hopkins being motivated, whether it's, you know, his uncle or his grandfather or the media or.
It is funny also how both of those receivers put themselves in the top 5, but neither of them put them at 1.
Right, I know. That is kind of funny.
Julio Jones is a freak of nature.
And so is Michael Thomas.
But Julio Jones, right now, he's not the number one guy.
He was hurt last. He played, what, 9 games last year?
He had 51 catches.
Michael Thomas was hurt this year. So I think Michael Thomas and Julio Jones, just based on that alone, kind of are pulled out of the conversation temporarily.
Yeah.
It's sort of like, it was like last year with Kevin Durant and Steph Curry. You just take them out of the conversation. Mm-hmm. They may come back, but for now, you take them out. To me, Devontae Adams, mm-hmm. Green Bay, Tyreek Hill, number 1. Devontae Adams from Green Bay, number 2. Stephon Diggs is really good. I think I've got DeAndre Hopkins 3 or 4. Am I missing anybody? I know Justin Jefferson had a great. I know DK Metcalf had a great year. I'm gonna have to see it a little more from both of them before I elevate them top 5.
It is funny.
Odell Beckham Jr. in the top 5? No thanks.
No.
It is funny that both of them did a top 5, if you include one person who had 7 people on his list, and neither of them said Tyreek Hill,
which is ridiculous.
But again,
that's one of the takeaways from the playoffs. Is that guy is the number 1 weapon at wideout in the NFL?
But we talked about it. Weapon as opposed to pure receiver.
Yeah, okay.
I mean,
there is a difference.
DeAndre
okay.
Hopkins does things as a wide receiver that Tyreek Hill can't do.
Catch Hail Marys.
His hands are far better.
I know.
But Tyreek Hill not in the top 5 is a little surprising from guys that actually play the position.
Listen, from watching Tampa last weekend, I'll tell you that Chris Godwin is all that. Mike Evans is not exactly trustworthy.
Yeah, he's up and down.
He drops a lot of balls, but he also catches a lot of touchdowns.
Where's Scotty Miller on this list?
Yeah, Scotty Miller.
Biggest catch of the weekend.
Really?
Both of these guys, both of them put themselves ahead of DeAndre Hopkins also.
Well that's what ticks him off, well, that these young bucks aren't showing him any respect.
Let's get D-Hop's top 5. I mean the 4 after him.
Let's get D-Hop on the radio to talk about it. We can get about $15 between us, can't we? Remember, he says he only does it for money.
Yeah.
Right.
And the shows that have been kind will get a discount.
That's right. So
look, the only thing I said negative about DeAndre Hopkins flipping off the official.
Stop.
Coming up next.
We're not in this business to pacify DeAndre Hopkins.
No, we're not. Coming up next, we will talk some Suns basketball. Kellen Olson from Arizona Sports, the big KO. He'll join us next. Bickley and Marotta, 98.7 FM, Arizona Sports Station.